This is a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.
Welcome to the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Now, if you've got a brand new phone or something for Christmas and you've only just stumbled across this show, let me quickly explain what happens. It's dead simple. My name is Dan. Hello. And in here, we talk about science. It's that easy. Especially, though, the most amazing, mind-blowing and dangerous parts of the universe. Today, we're headed into space to have a look at satellites. Also, we'll chat to a YouTuber, one of the most famous YouTubers ever, to talk about how he's doing experiments in his bedroom, and we'll learn about a deadly parasite that lives in the long grass. First, it's time to catch up with Sean from the Fun Kids Breakfast Show. He's fascinated by boats, and recently he's been learning everything about them. And today, it's what keeps them afloat.
Sean's science around ships.
Ahoy, me hearties. It's Sean here, back with Robot, and we're on pretty choppy waters today.
Feeling a bit sick, to be honest. I feel like the boat is going to flip over, like my tummy box.
Hang in there, mate. Ships are built so they can't easily flip over or capsize. Look, I'll load up the boat decks to put your mind at ease.
Okey-dokey, but make it quick.
Whether a boat capsizes or not has a lot to do with something called its centre of gravity. We think of gravity as a force that pulls things downward towards the Earth's centre, but it doesn't always work like that. Sometimes gravity can make things turn and topple over, especially if they are high up and unbalanced. Throw a ball in the air and gravity pulls it straight back down. Not everything moves like this, though, when gravity acts on it. Most objects are not nice, neat shapes like balls, so that means gravity acts on them in more complex ways. Even so, all objects behave as though their mass, the stuff they're made from, is concentrated at a point called their centre of gravity. A simple object, like a ball, has its centre of gravity in a very obvious place, right at its centre. But in a more complex object, like your body, the centre of gravity is slightly higher than your waist because there's more weight in the top half of your body than in the bottom half. It's like when you're walking alone on a narrow bar, you'll know that you have to stretch your arms to help stop falling off. Your centre of gravity is changing all the time as you move, and moving your arms keeps you from being pulled off the bar.
I am brilliant at balancing. Maybe because my shape is simpler than your shape.
I mean, yeah, that you could be right there, Robot.
But what has this got to do with boats?
Hang on, all right, I'm getting to that bit, Robot. Here it is. If you've ever climbed onto a rowboat tied to a jetty, you'll have a sense of how very unstable small boats can be when you start to load them. When you stand in a boat, you effectively become a part of it, so you alter its centre of gravity, instantly making it much higher up. Also, since you enter a boat from the side, the minute you step on board, you shift the centre of gravity over towards the place you're standing. Now, the centre of gravity is no longer above the centre of the boat, and that makes the whole thing rotate towards you. Uh-oh, it's not looking good. A boat can swing from side to side pretty freely, and because it's light, it only takes a small force to make it move in the water. All these things combined make a small boat relatively easy to... capsize. By sitting down in a small boat, you lower the centre of gravity and make it more stable. Generally, the lower the centre of gravity, the more stable boats are.
What about big boats? Those massive cruise ships?
Well, big boats often have heavy engines underneath the water level, which gives them a low centre of gravity and makes them more stable. They also have a big keel. That's a vertical board running underwater from back to front along the central spine. The keel helps stop boats rolling, moving from side to side, or capsizing, because it means more force is required to push the boat sideways through the water or rotate it.
But some cruise ships are mega tall too.
Yeah, as people want more and more luxurious ships, builders have to come up with some whoppers. There's one called the Floating Orchestra cruise ship, which has 17 stories. Some people think that's pushing it a bit. But anyway, we don't have to worry about that. Our ship hasn't even got one story.
Less is more, people.
Too right, Robot. We'll catch you next time. Bye!
Sean's science around ships, with support from Lloyd's Register Foundation. Find out more at funkidslive.com/ships.
We've got loads more Sean Ships adventures that you can catch up on for free on your phone or tablet. Get to iTunes, get to the free Fun Kids app, and you can always have a listen at funkidslive.com. Now, we're chatting to Charlie McDonnell in just a sec. You probably know him as the YouTuber Charlie Is So Cool Like, yeah? Well, he was the first British YouTuber to reach 1 million subscribers, and now he is using his power on the internet for some good, to teach people all about science. The thing is, he's kind of stolen my name. His channel is Fun Science. Mine is the Fun Kids Science Weekly, so I'm going to have it out with him. Stay there. We're chatting to him in just a sec, but just to warn you, it might get a little bit awkward and tetchy. First, I want to say a huge hello to Keith. Hello, Keith, who sent a message over to my page at funkidslive.com to say how much he and all his family love listening to the show, and they love learning about science, which is brilliant. Thank you so much for tuning in, Keith. Remember, if you want to get in touch with me and get your name read out on this show, it's that easy. You can send a message to funkidslive.com, or you can always leave us a 5-star review on the iTunes podcast store. Simply head on there, press a few buttons of your thumb on your phone, search for the Fun Kids Science Weekly, say some nice things, leave your name as well, and I will know that you're there. It's the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Now, today's guest is using the power of the internet for science. Right, he was the first British YouTuber to reach 1 million subscribers on there. His Fun Science series online and the actual physical book that you can pick up with your hand, it's amazing. Charlie Is So Cool Like, Charlie McDonnell. Hello!
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for gracing the Fun Kids Science Weekly with such an internet star. I'm so happy to have you on.
I feel like we're sort of like internet siblings, you know? We've got Fun Kids Science Weekly, and then we've got Fun Science, you know?
Well,
we're only two words away from each other.
Well, this is the first thing I wanted to make very clear, Charlie. Although, yeah, you may have a book, you may have a YouTube with millions of subscribers, but this podcast, it goes all over the world, so you need to watch your back with your naming, okay?
Okay, sure. Well, I mean, I feel like maybe maybe it's worth looking at the history of who came up with the name first. I'm happy to keep things civil for now.
Yeah, I think so. It depends how well this interview goes, I find. It will depend on whether I truly blame you for stealing my name. And now the book, right? The book is Fun Science, and it starts with a description of science, of kind of what we actually think it is. I thought it would make sense to start this interview by just 100% clarifying what science means.
Yeah, well, I mean, in the book, I sort of talk a little bit about how when I was in school, I wasn't really sure what science meant, because I think I thought of it more as just a subject that you learn about in school. You know, it's just a topic you have to take and you have to do your best to pass your exams, etc. It was only later in life that I kind of learned that science was, you know, it's a way for understanding and kind of explaining how the world works, as well as kind of being like the way of summing up the body of knowledge that kind of like the scientific method, which is how we figure out what is true. How all of that stuff comes together.
And now, yeah, Fun Science is the book then. What made you want to start writing about the way the universe and the world around us works? Because YouTubers, they go off and do a multitude of different things. You've got beauty products out, you've got sporting ranges. Why have you chosen science to specialise your mind in?
Well, I think the book kind of came out of the fact that I'd made a lot of Fun Science videos on my YouTube channel, as you say, and I always found that with those videos, like, there was so much more information than I could fit into kind of like a 3 or 4 minute video. And so writing a book where you have, you know, all of the time in the world, well, I mean, actually, the book was much longer. The editors made me cut it down because there was still so much I wanted to include. But it meant that I could go from, oh, I can talk about, you know, maybe kind of like a small topic in a YouTube video, to being like, well, now I can talk about how the entirety of science works in as much as I could in one book anyway. But I kind of felt like, you know, I've always just been a big fan of science, and I've wanted to share that with people, just like you can be a fan of anything, really. Fan of music, fan of TV shows, just a fan of science. And so it always felt like a nice fit to kind of be sharing that with people. But it's also nice when, you know, when you're a YouTuber, you can get stuck talking about yourself a lot. And that's just the way of it. And, you know, I kind of wanted to be doing, putting some good into the world. And I feel like understanding science is putting that good in. So, yeah.
It's a huge prospect, isn't it? I'd imagine, as you say, going from a 3 or 4 minute YouTube video to writing a multi-hundred page book. But with science, and you say you had to cut the book down, it's still a massive subject area for you to be talking about. How on earth did you select the most important things that you wanted to write about in your work?
I mean, it was ultimately kind of simple. I just talked about the stuff that I thought was the most interesting. That was kind of always my barometer. It's just like, is this incredibly cool? Like, because, you know, this is the fun stuff of science. You know, it's, I don't want to kind of like, I hope I'm not disappointing people, but some science can be boring sometimes. And so you want to look for the stuff that is the most interesting. But, you know, I kind of started by essentially kind of like looking at science in the way that it's kind of broken down naturally, which is by kind of by the scale of things that you're looking at. So that's kind of the format that the book follows. I started with talking about the entire universe and then down to talking about the solar system to Earth, all the way down to kind of, you know, atoms and particles and the forces of nature. And the chapters in the book get smaller as they go through, as I'm talking about smaller and smaller topics.
Now, sorry to catch you on the foot with this one, but you mentioned that some science can be boring, which is fine. Maybe it is in Fun Science, but it's not on the Fun Kids Science Weekly. What's the most surprisingly unboring part of science that you've come across? Maybe it's a part of the world and the universe that everyone thinks, oh, that's going to be really dull. But when you started researching it for your videos and for your book, you actually found it incredibly fascinating.
Well, one of the things that immediately comes to mind is geology. It was something I did talk about in the book as I was going through, as I reached the chapter about Earth and the science of Earth. A lot of it did come down to just talking about rocks. And it does seem like it could be like the most boring thing to talk about. And I acknowledge that in the book. And then I kind of started to discover about how you can kind of figure out like the history of the Earth just by looking through the rocks and looking through the different layers and how they come together. And there's this kind of like incredible you know, group effort that happens with all geologists as they're looking at all of these different layers of rocks and comparing them in different site parts of the world, and they can use that to figure out, you know, where oceans might have like risen and fallen. And all of that stuff. So that was one of the things that I was like, huh, there is actually a lot in the science of rocks. I was not expecting that.
Fun Science isn't just the book. As we said, it's the YouTube channel as well. What I love most about it is it's just so wild, I think is the right word. You kind of do experiments and research into ideas that no one really has. For instance, there's videos on there of the power of a hug. You ask,
oh, yeah.
Also, what makes something cute? Where'd you get your ideas from to do this? How are you deciding what you're going to investigate in the world in your YouTube videos?
Well, those ideas actually came from talking with my girlfriend. Like, she was talking to me about like how she was just interested in knowing why we find something to be cute. And it doesn't seem like something that you would immediately think of, what's the scientific reasoning behind that? But of course, like the more like research I you know, sometimes I would just pick out a random question like that and just be like, I'm just going to look into what the science is behind that and just see if there's anything interesting behind it. And so like with the science of why we find something cute, for example, like why we find a kitten to be cute, it's because it shares similar features to human babies. And we want to naturally find human babies to be cute. Like that instinct helped us to nurture them, which helps with reproduction of our species. Kind of goes back to evolution and how that works. And so it's kind of fun taking those questions that you're just like, huh, I wonder why things are cute or why we like hugging so much, and just kind of exploring where the science might come. Not that I don't like also talking about things like I did an episode about Mars, which feels like a very sciencey topic. too. But it's also fun to just kind of explore those other questions as well that you might just that might just pop into your head.
When we say cute things, we often say cute and cuddly things, don't we? Why do you think we find cuddly and like hairy animals the cutest? That's surely nothing to do with the fact they look like babies.
It's nothing to do with the fact they look like babies. No, I'm trying to figure out. I don't think I actually did any research into that specifically. I preface this by saying I'm not a scientist. I'm just a science fan. My guess would be that it comes down to something about the fact that when I know there's some research that's been done into like when we like enjoy something that is like warm essentially, and it's like it comes back to enjoying warm things because it comes back to kind of nurturing infants and wanting to have an infant kind of like close, or being an infant and enjoying the sensation of being warm. So I don't know if the fur kind of like contributes to the warmth in some way. That would be my guess anyway.
Charlie, thanks so much for coming on. It's Fun Science, the book and the YouTube series. Very quickly before you go, this is the most serious point. Have you got a pen and paper?
I don't know.
Well, just on your laptop or something, I just want you to quickly write down the bank details that you need to send all my royalties to for using Fun Science.
Yeah. No, I've already got that down, actually. Yeah, sure.
Good. That's handy.
Yeah, no problem.
Good. Next few weeks, I'll expect to see them.
You might receive an email from my lawyer, actually, if that's okay. We'll talk about this off air. How about that?
Cheers, Charlie. Charlie McDonald, thanks so much for coming on the Fun Kids Science Weekly.
Very, very happy to be here. Thanks a lot.
Right, it is time for this week's Dangerous Dan, then, where we talk about the most evil, deadly, and mean things in the whole universe. And today we're headed into the long grass for a tiny bug that can kill you. Because ticks are small, parasitical arachnids, which sounds pretty horrible, doesn't it? It means they've got 8 legs and they feed on your blood. Now, they're tiny and they live in long, damp grass all over the world, and the countryside here in the UK is full of them. And they bite down into human flesh and they stay there, stuck, hanging onto your skin, sucking out your blood, and they can put into your blood all sorts of diseases. Here in the UK, they're associated with Lyme disease, which starts as like an itchy red bullseye bruise target where you've been bitten, and then it causes fever, paralysis, and even heart attacks. And it gets worse, because in Australia, you can catch full-blown tick paralysis where you seize up, you can't move, and you can even choke. Now, the worst part about these tiny beasts, ticks, is that they don't let go at all. If you try and pull it out of your skin too hard without care, the body will fly away with your tweezers or whatever, but it will leave the head stuck there, piercing you, stuck to your skin, sucking out your blood. So, yeah, we're starting 2018 with something that sounds nice and a sweet insect, but really it's a tiny, evil and mean one, and it can be found all over the country. We'll get one of your science questions that you've sent over to my page at funkidslive.com answered by our expert Tom on the show in just a sec. And today it's getting a little bit gross. Stay there, it's on in a bit. First, we're catching up with Amy Aviation, who's taking to the sky to find out how we see what's going on around the world.
Amy Aviation's British Aeronautics.
Loads of places around the UK which are associated with Britain's aerospace industry. Some of them might be near to where you live. Let's spin the propeller and see where we're headed today. It's Guildford. Get ready for takeoff. Guildford is in Surrey. So if you live in the southeast, that's pretty close to home. It's home to a company called SSTL. They're experts in satellite technology. Maybe you already know that satellites are small objects sent into Earth's orbit to do a number of different jobs. Some take measurements of the atmosphere and the Earth, while others are for communication, like phones and entertainment. In fact, there are hundreds of jobs that these handy machines do, and thousands of satellites are in orbit around our planet. Over the last 60 years, scientists have learned a lot about how best to make and launch these crafts. In the early days, every single part of the satellite was built from scratch. Scientists thought that space was so different that any part and components made for machines on Earth just wouldn't be good enough. This meant that making a satellite took a long time and cost a huge amount of money, because each time they'd be starting again. Imagine if your mum's car needed a new tyre. It's much quicker to buy a ready-made one instead of trying to make a tyre yourself. Over the last 30 years, the team at SSTL realised that you could use machinery and parts that already existed. Just think how this helps speed things up. With 49 satellites launched to date and with work on 11 new missions, SSTL are experts in the very latest cool satellite technology, building new and better satellites right here, right now. Just think how cool it would be to be involved in designing and building a new satellite on its way to space. See you next time.
Amy Aviation's British Aeronautics, with support from the Royal Aeronautical Society. Find out more at funkidslive.com/Amy.
So it's the first Fun Kids Science Weekly of 2018, right? And if one of your New Year's resolutions is to become much smarter about science, and you want to get that started with answering one of the niggly little annoying questions that's staying in your head, it won't leave, right? If you've got a science question that you want answered, well, this is the show to come to, obviously, because we've got our own expert. His name is Tom, he's here every single week, and he will answer the question that you send to my page at funkidslive.com. Tom, our next question today comes from Kiva, who is 8. Thank you, Kiva, for sending your question in. Remember, you can always do so over at funkidslive.com or on our free app. And Kiva asks, how many bones do you have in your bum?
Well, your bum is actually a muscle. So each cheek is a different muscle, and it's called gluteus maximus.
And so there's no bones that anywhere inside the muscle?
Not inside the muscle. The muscle attaches itself to bones. So you have your pelvis and your hip, and you have your femur, which it attaches to.
So if we've got these two muscles with no bones near them, why do they grow there? We've got muscles all over our body. Why do they know where to develop, where they do?
It's to do with the skeleton we have. So the skeleton supplies support, but it can't move on its own, or we can't control the movement on its own. So we have these muscles so we can control how the skeleton moves.
Right, it's time to see what sciencey stuff has been in the news this week. Scientists in Rome have developed a bionic hand with a sense of touch, and it's the first one that can even be worn outside of the lab. You see, Almarina Mascarello, she lost her hand in an accident 25 years ago, and she says with the new bionic one, it's like having her own back again. She can wear it all around. It's linked through her arm to the brain, and it responds to feelings of touch and heat. Also, an interstellar asteroid may hold water from another star system. Scientists have spotted this hurtling through space in October, and they think that its speed means that it's coming from another solar system, and it might hold ice water inside. And finally, the UK has achieved its greenest ever year in 2017. The National Grid have revealed that the UK generated more wind, nuclear, and solar power in the country than we've ever done before. And now the UK is the fourth cleanest power system in Europe. And get this, in June, green power generated more energy than any other fuel in the country combined. Which is big news as we move into 2018 and towards the future. Yeah, and it's almost the end of this episode of the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Very quickly before we go, though, we've got a chance to check in with one of our favourite geniuses on the show. It's Professor Hallux. This is from his Happy Health Desk series. And today he's finding all about butterflies.
Professor Hallux's Happy Health Help Desk, with support from the Wellcome Trust.
Aha! I've got a call! Hallux's Happy Health Help Desk.
Hello, Professor Hallux. Why do we get butterflies in our stomach when we're nervous?
Don't worry, these aren't real butterflies. It's just the name given to the jittery feeling you can get when you're a bit nervous. So here's what's going on. When an animal in the wild is in danger, its body releases a burst of the hormone called adrenaline. This causes some of the blood in the body to be diverted to the muscles. Why the muscles? Because muscles will help the animal to fight or get the heck out of there. It's sometimes called the fight or flight reflex. Now, anxious human beings aren't normally in danger of fighting a lion, but the same thing occurs. Your brain prepares you for action by releasing adrenaline, which diverts blood to your muscles, and that means away from less essential organs like your stomach, leaving it feeling rather strange. It's also the reason why you might not feel hungry when you're worried, but it's only temporary, and when the excitement has passed, your tummy and appetite should get back to normal.
Discover more medical facts you've always wondered about on the Fun Kids website, funkidslive.com. Professor Hallux's Happy Health Help Desk with support from the Wellcome Trust.
There are so many Professor Hallux episodes and adventures that you can catch up on for free. Download them, listen wherever you fancy, on the Fun Kids app, on iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts from as well, and over at funkidslive.com. And that is it for another show, another episode of the Fun Kids Science Weekly done. More brains expanded as well, and fingers crossed, more awards on the shelf. Someday, maybe. You can help me out, though, with that. Because if you do really love the Fun Kids Science Weekly and you want to help us out, get onto the iTunes podcast store, find us on there and leave us a review. It really helps us. Write some nice words. You can leave 5 stars if you fancy to. Also, while you're on there, you can catch up with all the brilliant Fun Kids Science science series that we've got. You can also get them wherever you get your podcasts from, on the free Fun Kids app and over at funkidslive.com. And remember, you can listen to Fun Kids all over the country on the free Fun Kids app, on your DAB digital radio, and as always, we're at funkidslive.com.
So that was a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.